Today, we read, of course, this passion narrative taken from John, and it's not just a reading of the passion narrative that we're doing. In a great sense, this whole liturgy that we're doing is so that we might enter into it, that we might live it. The readings, the silence, all the actions from the prostration in the beginning, all the way through to the veneration that we will do and not long from now, are steps of following Jesus, you know, step by step, step by step. It's a living of the mystery of Christ. It's a solemn way of doing it. Note two is not overly theatrical, because really it's not supposed to be. It's supposed to be leading you to an interior act of faith, hope, and love. You know, it's not supposed to lead immediately to the emotional, but immediately to the contemplation of the beauty, the truth, the goodness of Christ. I know that many of us in our parish come from all over the world. I am deeply, deeply impressed. It's hitting me hard, especially recently. And last year, there must have been a huge immigration here. And too, all of us coming out of COVID. And we, last I counted, are well over 50 different nationalities in our parish, which is larger than almost every parish in London. You know, it'd be the most metropolitan parishes in London would have that, or New York. It's very impressive. What it means, though, concretely, is why are we here? Well, we are honestly, truly united by this living of the passion of Jesus. And I see it because when it's specifically cultural, I only see sections. But when it has to do with the liturgy, or it has to do with something that is profoundly rooted in all of our cultures, this following of Christ, all of us arrive in mass, in number. It's beautiful to see. Now, in this particular day, I wanted to bring out those three things. It's the listening to the story, hearing the word, the ritual reenactment that we're going to do, and finally, the transformation of our own life. Now, that hearing of the word, we have to let go of everything going on in our life. We have so many distractions today. And it's not just the obvious ones like the cell phone, but it's the level of anxiety. The level of anxiety today, it's surprising within your own hearts. And we have to let go of all of that and come and listen. Because if we come in with all this baggage, there's no way we can hear the other, let alone hear Christ. We have this long passion narrative where obviously the church isn't giving it so that I can explain every part. It's impossible. It's too long. There's too much. There's too much to it. It's giving it to you so that you might live of it, so that you might have the intelligence of it. You might be able to hear it once again. We note, too, that it's given by John, St. John, and he was an eyewitness. It's given, the same passage is given every Friday, Good Friday, that is. It's important because as an eyewitness, he was the only eyewitness to write about this. All the others have either seen it from afar, saw maybe a part of it, or heard it secondhand. And it's a call to imagine, you know, I know in some of the countries where you come from, when we say, crucify him, the local diocese has you say that. As you say it out loud, You know, you say the aspect of the crowd. One day we might do that. I don't know. We'll see if we get ready for that. But in our hearts, it's definitely real. We're allowed to imagine the whole scenario. And those mockers, those silently gazing on. But there's also the silence of Mary. Mary stood firm next to him as he walked his way of the passion. We don't have any words from her, but we know she stood there. And before the tragedy of life, that is the right response. I don't know if there are words. There are words. But there is presence. There is love. There is reality of gift. That's true. Second, I brought up, it's the whole ritual and reenactment that we're going to do. In a little bit, we'll do the whole veneration of the cross. We've just heard with our ears so that our minds might become awake. And in a little bit, we're going to intercede. You know how we have the prayers of the faithful normally? Well, today is the prayers of the faithful, as the solemn prayers of the faithful right away. And after we've done invoking for the whole world, basically, invoking the Holy Spirit to send his grace upon it, we're all going to come and venerate. And in our hearts, we're going to kiss that very cross. And when we do that, you know, today we're just going to actually come up and kneel. And I'm going to invite you to enter into a great silence. And if you wish to say after in silence, you can come up and venerate by touching the cross or kissing the cross after. But when we're doing that, it's a symbol, right? But it's that symbol of the reality that I do not want to live in the world where suffering and pain or interior agony is the last note. I don't want to live in that world. I don't want to live in a world where power stamps out love, where might makes right. When I kiss the cross, I'm saying, I want to live in this world where the cross is real, where Jesus' victory over death is victory of the love of God, God's love, which is more powerful than the ground that we're standing upon, more powerful than the planet on which we are, that God's love raises even the dead. That's the world that I live in. And when we kiss that cross, it's not about kissing suffering. It's about kissing that victory of the human heart through the Holy Spirit over death. It's an act of hope that I will not flinch. I will stand firm with Mary at that foot of the cross. I will not run like Peter. I will not betray like Judas. I will stand firm with him. The whole reality of the stripping of the altar, how it's all bare today, that whole symbolism of the self-emptying, you know how God gave of himself completely, and today there's nothing left. When he cries out, I thirst, he wants to give more, but his humanity has given all. There's nothing left in his humanity. And so it's only his divinity that offers continuously. His humanity emptied out, pours out his blood and his water from his side. Gives his literal heart. And it's this emptiness of the altar, emptiness of the tabernacle, that's speaking about this spiritual poverty of gift. And I've heard many of you say, Father, I've given, 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 I've given. I keep on giving and I'm empty. And you know, where do you find the strength to keep on going? Where do you find the strength to keep on going? And you know, the only place I find it is in him. Personally, that's the only place I find it is when I learn to rest my head upon his heart. to trust in God, not in me, to hope that exhaustion because of the powers of this world and the inability to live in harmony in this world and selfless gift in this world, the exhaustion that comes from that will not be the last note in my life. I trust in the Holy Spirit. I hope once again. It's that ability today to say, you are my source of life, God. Holy Spirit, I will rest upon the heart of Jesus. Or the great silence when we leave today, we'll just leave in absolute silence. We won't be there to greet. I won't be there to greet. I mean, I don't mind if someone says something or right. We're not going to be. But not in the church. Not in the church. Not in the church. We go forth in this great silence because Christ has died. God is dead. God is dead. And it's true. That's one of the only times you can say that. It's because God, the infinite one, was made flesh in the person of Jesus Christ. And Jesus' body and soul are separate. He's dead. And so Jesus is dead. Jesus is God. Therefore, God is dead in that sense. In that sense alone. But God is dead. His soul has gone down to the netherworld to bring up by his hand, symbolically, to bring up by his hand all those who have gone before us, to take them into the heart of the Father. And so all these ritual reenactments are there to lead us into a true transfiguration, transformation. You know, that mystical moment, that moment when John sees the water and the blood flow from the side of Christ. It's not just a symbol. It's what we live of in the Eucharist. It's this continual gift. Is that God is alive right now. And he's giving to you. So it's not just a reenactment. It's the reality that God is asking us to live of it now. To live of it in truth. And that passion narrative is not just a narrative of history. It transcends history and descends right now. Christ is alive. He is resurrected. And we will celebrate it with all of our hearts. We know his victory is already had. And the Eucharist is prefigured in those passages when he gives his heart, his broken body, poured out blood. They're all gifts of the cross. His altar was literally his cross, where he's nailed to that altar. And we're left with that challenge as we go out. Are we going to leave here truly unchanged? Is it just a nice memory, a nice history? This experience today demands an actual response, or else vanity of vanities. All things are vanity. How will the stark love of the cross shape who I am? And I come back to that consistently. I do not want to live in a world where I do not become a Eucharistic man or woman. I do not want to live of a world where I do not become transformed by the cross. That's the only thing that makes sense. And all the philosophy, all the theology, all the studies of the science, all the studies of literature that I've ever done in my life, none of it makes sense without that cross. And so we emerge from this day not defeated, but filled. Filled within that silence of hope that was in the heart of Mary, that's in the heart of all the saints who've gone before us, that great cloud of witnesses. And may our lives, transformed by encountering Christ, continue to go out this week to live of this gift. I want to invite each of you, to really rest upon Jesus. Take that moment of silence right after the service. Stay still. Invite his Spirit. In your heart, kiss the cross. For nothing, nothing, nothing compares but to the infinite love that God has given us through his Son.